James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you've read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Good afternoon and welcome, everybody, to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Thrilled to have each and every one of you with us this afternoon. And we look forward to having a good show today, especially with your participation. And, of course, you can call us at 866-546-5254, toll-free. 866-546-5254. We welcome all the new listeners that may be with us today. Always exciting to hear from new people, and we've heard from a lot of new people lately, and that's a very good thing. It seems people are starting to listen to reason and listen to the voices from the left instead of to be inundated with right-wing talk radio 24/7, and some reasonable people. A lot of very good email here the past week or two coming from folks formerly on the right or in the center, but we are very glad to have all of you along with us. And speaking of contact we've had with listeners lately, we're going to have some Republican love today. That's right. We're going to have a few minutes of Republican love. I'm looking to see what time we're going to have that. I think late in the first hour is when we'll probably do that. So tell your friends and neighbors, get them on the phone, tell them to tune in. If they want to hear some wacky, and I do mean wacky, letters from our Republican friends who are still the diehard 28%ers, why, be sure and tune in. It's going to be somewhere during the top or the end of the first hour, I'm pretty sure. A lot to talk about today. We want to talk about the economy some. We want to talk about politics. We want to talk about the war, the situation with Gonzo. A lot of weird news over the weekend. God, some horrible stories. It seems, is it just that the media is doing a better job? And by media, I mean the net and the radio and TV and everybody added together. Is it just that we're so much more aware of everything that goes on now? God, did you read that story about that the so-called preacher, an Arkansas teen following his call to preach to Galveston, accompanied by his mother, his wife, and two-month-old daughter? And while the other adults were out of his hotel room, he put his baby, two-month-old baby, in the microwave and told police he did it because he was stressed. His 20-year-old wife, a self-professed good Christian girl, claims Satan made her husband microwave the infant and says he has unspecified mental problems for which she has tried unsuccessfully to get him help. The child's injuries required at least two skin grafts. The guy's in jail on $250,000 bond. Oh, my God. Ah, what a story. What a story. And seems like we hear more and more of these types of things all the time. And did you see the fascinating MSNBC poll that was up yesterday and today? of over 400,000 people who responded to the poll of whether or not they wanted Junior Bush to be impeached, 433,817 responses. 88%, the last time I checked, 88% of over 433,000 people claimed, yes, they would like to see Mr. Bush impeached. It would be a dream. What a glorious day that would be to wake up from a fitful slumber, turn on the TV and say, George W. Bush has been impeached, or that he took the Nixon route and resigned before he was impeached. Either will do. Either will do just fine. And, of course, over the weekend, we had many more examples, several more examples that I became aware of compassionate conservatism. And you all know what a laugh I think that is. Did you see some of the stories coming out of Los Angeles? A paraplegic man wearing a soiled hospital gown and a broken colostomy bag was found crawling in a gutter in Skid Row in Los Angeles on Thursday after being dumped in the street by a Hollywood Presbyterian Medical Center van, police said. The incident, witnessed by more than two dozen people, was described by police as a particularly outrageous case of homeless dumping that has been plaguing the downtown area. Now imagine this. Imagine this. And the cop said, I can't think of anything colder than this. The LAPD detective Russ Long, who called the case the most egregious of his kind that he's ever seen in his career, said there was no mission around, no services. It's the worst area of Skid Row. And these people from the Hollywood Presbyterian Medical Center dumped him out, a paraplegic who had to crawl down the street. What is this country coming to? And if that's not enough, did you see the 60 Minutes report on Sunday evening about the woman in a gown that was dumped in front of a shelter in L.A.? The people in the shelters have been aware that these sort of things have started happening, so they put in cameras to catch it when it did happen so they could substantiate the claims. She was in a gown, had been dumped in front of a shelter in L.A., dropped off in her gown only because they had lost her clothing and her shoes. The hospital had lost her clothing and her shoes, called a taxi, put her in it, and had them dump her in front of this shelter. She was suffering from dementia and other problems. And I don't know if you saw the woman or not, but they said she was 62 years old. She could have passed for 90. Woman's obviously had a extremely hard life. And so she had dementia and these other medical problems, but they released her and called a cab and told the cabbie to dump her right in front of the shelter. And all I can say is, thank you, Ronald Reagan. No, Ronald Reagan didn't order the cab. He's not ordering cabs nowadays. I can't remember this kind of thing being okay with Americans until the modern-day conservative movement got into high gear during the St. Ronnie of Reagan administration. If we as a nation have become so calloused, so indifferent to the problems of people like these, that we can allow this to happen without significant outrage from all segments of our society, then we do not deserve to flourish and prosper as a nation. Frankly, I'm sickened by these stories. And I watched the report on Sunday night, and I could barely contain my anger and my frustration with this whole thing. And I was all at the same time terribly saddened and ashamed and outraged at the disregard for human dignity these hospitals showed in these cases. And I've already heard right-wingers comment on the situation. Well, it's too bad, but, you know, we can't be responsible for people like that. We have to take care of ourselves, and others need to do the same. What a cop-out. What a lack of sensitivity toward the plight of others. What an inhumane attitude. And please, don't anybody tell me that we have what we like to say is the finest healthcare system in the world when things like this happen on a regular basis. Don't tell me that we're the most civilized nation on earth. Don't tell me that we're the moral leaders of the world when we're dumping sick and destitute people into the streets, left to crawl, left to die, left to experience the horrors of dementia on your own. Don't brag to me about our compassion for others, because since these compassionate conservatives have infected our society with their let everyone fend for themselves, pull themselves up with their bootstraps attitude, we have been diminished as a nation. We've dropped several rungs on the ladder of civility. For a couple of decades now, we've allowed the conservatives to foster and nurture this attitude of selfishness and lack of shame. We have to lead this nation back to being the caring, more civilized country we used to be. This can't go on if we're to think of ourselves as decent people. For truly, what I've witnessed in these matters is an indecent. It's as indecent as anything I've ever witnessed. And these so-called compassionate conservatives' minds, it's indecent to display a historic statue in the Justice Department with bare breasts. But it's just fine to allow sick, helpless people to be dumped in the streets. I don't understand it. I will never understand it. There are more stories about this. It's been happening for a long time now, this dumping of homeless people by hospitals. Not just in Los Angeles, but all around the country. But there's an especially horrible story that took place over the weekend, which is, it staggers you when you hear it. It's staggering. It was, again, in Los Angeles, though. In the emergency room at Martin Luther King Jr. Harbor Hospital, Edith Isabel Rodriguez was seen as a complainer by the people there. And so, let me just read you part of this story out of the L.A. Times. It said, thanks a lot, officers, an emergency room nurse told the L.A. County Police, who brought in Rodriguez early in May 9th after finding her in front of the Willowbrook Hospital yelling for help. They said, this is her third time here. The 43-year-old mother of three had been released from the emergency room hours earlier, her third visit in 3 days for abdominal pain. She'd been given prescription medication and a doctor's appointment. And turning to Rodriguez, the nurse said, you've already been seen, and there's nothing we can do, according to a report by the County Office of Public Safety, which provides the security at the hospital. Parked in the emergency room lobby in a wheelchair after police left, she fell to the floor. She lay on the linoleum, writhing in pain for 45 minutes as staffers worked at their desk and numerous patients looked on. Aside from one patient who briefly checked on her condition, no one helped her. This is in a hospital in the United States of America. No one helped her. A janitor cleaned the floor around her as if she were a piece of furniture. A closed-circuit camera captured everyone's apparent indifference to this woman's plight. And arriving to find Rodriguez on the floor, her boyfriend unsuccessfully tried to enlist help from the medical staff and county police. Even a 911 dispatcher who balked at sending rescuers to a hospital. And I can understand that. Alerted to the disturbance in the lobby, police stepped in by running Rodriguez's record No one's taking care of her physical health, but they run her record and found an outstanding warrant and prepared to take her to jail. She died before she could be put into a squad car. She slipped off her wheelchair onto the floor and curled into a fetal position, screaming in pain. And the nurses told her to get off the floor and into the chair. And the police reported this. The two officers and a different nurse helped her back into the wheelchair and brought her close to the reception counter where a staff member asked her to remain seated. The officers left, and Rodriguez again pitched forward onto the floor, apparently unable to get up. Because the videotape does not have sound, it's not possible to determine whether Rodriguez was screaming or what she was saying. But when Rodriguez's boyfriend, Jose Prado, returned to the hospital after an errand and saw her on the floor, he alerted nurses and then he called the 911. 911 said they couldn't do anything. Prado then knocked on the door of the county police near the emergency room and said, "My girlfriend needs help and they don't want to help her." A sergeant told him to consult the medical staff. Minutes later, Prado came back to the sergeant and said they don't want to help her. Again, he was told to see the medical staff. And within minutes, police began taking Rodriguez into custody. And when they told Prado that there was a warrant for Rodriguez's arrest, he asked if she would get medical care wherever she was taken. They assured him that she would. He then kissed her and left. She was wheeled to the patrol vehicle, and the door was opened so that she could get into the back. And when officers asked her to get up, she did not respond. An officer tried to revive her with a pneumonia inhalant, then checked for a pulse, and found none. I am deeply troubled, and I know you are as well, that this is happening in this country. Country I was born in, most of you were born in, have been so proud of all my life. And I've been so proud of the American people and what this country has stood for. But I start seeing stories like this more and more and more frequently. And it's hard to take. It's hard to take not only because of the horrible suffering of these people. That's certainly the most important part of it. After all, we are supposed to be a civilized society and have some regard for one another. Obviously, there are many people who have no regard for their fellow human beings, and what a crime that is to have them working in hospitals. I know, and don't send the emails, I know people in these hospital settings and these poor neighborhoods and so forth are deluged with people day after day after day. I know that. But as the saying goes, if you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen. If you're going to treat people like that, if you're going to treat people in a hospital, for God's sake, without an ounce of humanity, then get out. You don't belong there. Because no matter how much good this woman has done for other patients, her attitude is wrong. The hospital's attitude is wrong. It's just an awful situation. It really is. And I hope to God that we can turn around. Turn this country around before we get any farther down this this horrible, horrible path of absolutely being inhumane to people. It has got to stop. We know it has to stop. And yet we see evidence that it's happening more and more and more, that the nation is losing its conscience. And frankly, that's something I thought I'd never see in this country. I really didn't. 866-546-5254. Love to hear from you. We'll be back in just a moment.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
This is Billy Shears. Join me every Friday at 11 a.m. Eastern on Boxed Up with John Fox. Each week, I'll feature an artist and a song with a little commentary. We'll examine why music plays such an important role in our social and political climate. We'll try and make it fun, informative, and entertaining. Join us every Friday at 11 a.m. Eastern right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn, with John Fox on Boxed Up. And for music with political commentary by great liberal minds, check out my website at unreportednews.net. This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
And now a message from the President of the United States, George W. Bush.
Good morning. This week I come to you with a heavy heart as we mourn the passing of the great Reverend Jerry Falwell. He was a great friend, a great supporter, a great Christian, a proud crusader against the sin of the sodomites. In case you're not aware of those cold words, I'm talking about the butt sex. It's wrong. Jerry Falwell knew the man gays were the greatest perpetrators of this sin, and he worked his whole life to stem the tide of this butt sex lifestyle. When he wasn't devoting himself and his vast fortune to this worthy cause, he was supporting African apartheid, and working hard against the dangers of the civil rights movement. The Reverend Falwell inspired a nation when he revealed God's truth that the gays and their kindred sinners were the cause of Katrina and 9/11. And so far, no one has been able to prove him wrong. Some have said that the Reverend was hateful of the gays, but nothing could be further from the truth. He loved the sinners. He only hated the sinning of the sinners. And I know deep down the homosexuals appreciated this and mourn his passing. The government is with you in your time of need, gays. Emergency faith-based funding is available if you need grief counseling. Just don't use that money to buy more butt sex. Thank you for listening, and God bless you.
Ah, yes. The man left a legacy. He did. Welcome to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. You can join the program and throw in your 2 cents, maybe three if you like, at 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. I hate to bring you stories like the one I just talked about. I do. It's troubling to me, and it causes me pain to research these stories and watch them and find out what really happened so they can bring you the truth about them. But we can't sweep these things under the rug any longer. We can't allow this sort of thing to keep happening in our country. We just can't. And so an awareness by the populace is what is important. And that's why I bring you stories like that. That's why we talk about things like that. It's an illness that our society is suffering right now. It's a disease we have, and it's spreading. And it has been nurtured and furthered by the right-wing, compassionate conservatives, and especially starting during the Reagan era when people just started to say, well, to hell with everybody except myself. That's not the American way. It may be the American way for those who like to grab what they can grab for themselves and don't give a damn about anybody else. But by and large, since the start of this great nation, that has not been the American way. Oh, yes, we've had the Gilded Age with the Carnegies and the Mellons and the Rockefellers and all these people grabbing everything they could grab, the robber barons and all that. And we'll always have a segment of society like that. We always will. But what about the rest of us? What about the rest of us acting like we don't give a damn about things like that, about these horrible stories we just spoke of? Don't we owe our friends and neighbors more than that? Don't we owe every human being the consideration of medical care? And oh, I know some of you are saying, no, we don't. Not if they can't pay for it. Do you know anybody that can't pay for it? I do. Do you know anybody that could end up in the same straits as these people I just talked about? I do. And as the old saying goes, they're but for the grace of God. Go I. Or you. It's time to talk about these issues. It's time to put them out in the open. It's time to shine the light of truth on them so that we can get back to being a good and just people like we used to be. Let's head to the phones. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Oh, hello, Guy. It's Teresa calling from Canada.
Hi, Teresa.
How are you?
Good.
You're right, it's not the American way to treat people like that. It's just been getting worse and worse lately, and I think you're right that it is the Republican Party dehumanizing people, basically.
That's the word. That is the word.
Like when you were describing that story of that poor woman, all I could think of, have you ever seen that movie Bringing in the Dead with Nicolas Cage? He plays the ambulance attendant who's basically losing it.
No, I haven't seen it.
It's in like a just really busy hospital in New York City, and it made me think of that. What did the woman die of?
It turns out she had, I believe, a ruptured bowel, and it had caused a severe infection that takes people rather quickly.
But that would be horrible, horrible agony.
It was a horrible death, and have you been in some of these big hospitals and seen the emergency room hallways and all? I mean, it's always a tragic scene.
Mm-hmm.
But right. to think that the callousness that took place in this, I tell you, I watched this episode of this indigent dumping on 60 Minutes Sunday night, and then I saw this other story, and I know this has been happening for a long time, and I've been meaning to report on it, but it kind of, a lot of it came to a head this weekend, and it made me terribly depressed to watch that. But like I said, and yet we must know about it so that we can try and mm-hmm. do something.
And a big part of it too is marginalizing the mentally ill and dehumanizing them. It's all about the almighty dollar. So, you've got people overworked in the hospital and that. And, like, I'm not saying that woman was or anything, but, it's just a...
Well, our
throwaway person that they can just, like, just dump her at a shelter.
Our whole medical system is upside down. On the one hand, we've got doctors, specialists, and so forth nowadays making millions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
They go to school for the money, specializing in one thing or another. And on the other hand, we've got your GPs, a lot of them that work in an emergency room environment and so forth that probably don't make the money they ought to, although mm-hmm. they all come out okay. Nurses, for the most part, vastly underpaid, just like school teachers.
Mm-hmm.
It's topsy-turvy. The people, the medical personnel in so many cases like these hospitals are overworked and underpaid, and yet we have the specialists sitting in the ivory towers in Naples, Florida,
making
a fortune.
And then they're hiring people to do jobs where it should be like a registered nurse doing it, and they've got, you know,
sure,
healthcare aides or whatever.
That's right.
You know, do they do criminal checks or background checks on some of these people? The dumping thing, too, I didn't see the one on 60 Minutes, but there was another one that happened a few months ago. It was a man, but it was the same type of thing. He was found, I don't know where his wheelchair ended up, but I guess he was just sort of just wheeled out of the hospital. And
yeah, they put him in a cab and told the cab to get rid of him. And
well, this guy didn't even have a cab. See you later.
Well, it's a terrible situation, and I hope there's enough outrage and angst amongst the American mm-hmm. people to actually talk to our people that can do something about it and get something done about it. Fortunately, you don't face a lot of that in Canada, do you?
It's not perfect here either.
No.
The hospital thing, I've never seen anything like that. But it was like the mentally ill becoming homeless and that. I used to work in Toronto. I don't live in Toronto, but I used to work there and commute. It was hellish. But, like, a lot of the homeless people that you see, they're clearly mentally ill. They shouldn't have been out in the streets.
Well, they closed.
And it's cold in Toronto in the winter.
Oh, yeah. Been there. I've been there on probably what was one of its coldest days ever. Mm-hmm. Hey, thanks so much for your call. Good to hear from you.
Oh, thanks for taking my call.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Well, let's go over to line one. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hello?
Hello?
Hi, this is Diana up in Olympia, Washington.
Hi, Diana.
Hi, I've called you once or twice before. This is really near and dear to my heart because every other day I go up about 30 miles north of here and I visit my mom in the nursing home because I couldn't get her into one here in Olympia because it's like 35% of the people here are elderly in this town. And anyhow, the reason I called was because these nursing homes are just also full of people who just are undercared. If I didn't go and see my mother, and I take a bus, takes me 3 hours to get up there, and my husband gives me a ride home from Tacoma where he works. But if I didn't go up there and make sure that they're cleaning her properly and everything, because she lived with me for 8 years, so I know all the needs she has. But if I didn't clean her, and I mean completely clean her, you know what I'm saying, Guy?
Sure.
And make sure her skin is okay and that her teeth are okay. They lost her false teeth, and so I had to make a deal with them that I'd pay for half if they'd pay for half because she's paying out of her own pocket. $6,500 a month for this place. And that doesn't include me washing all her laundry, and me buying all her diapers, because their diapers are so, make her legs more chafed. So I buy her those Depends, you know, that are softer.
Well, do they, does the company that owns this, do they have more than one nursing home?
Oh, sure.
Some of these,
you know what?
Some of these big
company, this was a one company nursing home until about a year ago, or a little less than a year ago. The Catholic Church, who I am a member of, so I feel I can, you know, criticize them. I'm a wayward type Catholic, but they sold that one nursing home so they could put up a clinic up in Gig Harbor, which is sort of the Beverly Hills of South Puget Sound, Washington. You know, that's where all the money people go, and they needed to have a nursing home down there, and it was well run by the nuns. They were the ones who built it because there's a nun retirement home right across from there. And the thing that I can't understand is these profit guys come in there, and the care went down really drastically. The food is like sandwiches and soup for dinner. She doesn't get the same quality. And so because I feel like I'm stuck between a rock and a hard place, I have to deal with it the way it is, and I try and be as positive with the staff because it's not their fault.
Well, the staff no doubt's been cut because the bottom line looks better with fewer people on the payroll, and that's what these large conglomerates are doing. That's what these large conglomerates are doing. I know many nurses.
They're all robbers. But Guy, I have to tell you this: these girls that were CNAs, some of them had a chance to stay on with this outfit, and they were told that they would have to pay some of them even $900 a month insurance to be able to work there. Where in our state, we just got our minimum wage lifted to, I think it's $7.45 an hour. I don't know, but somewhere in there. But if you only make that much, you're not going to be able to afford $900 a month with
no.
your kids and stuff.
No, certainly not.
I mean, it's so evil, and I just wanted to reiterate some other things about this. Michael Moore is coming out with this film that I think everybody is going to be just, hopefully it's just really going to shake up the system some more. Like, I love Michael Moore. I think he's the man of the people. And he's this new movie called Sicko. It's going to be about, some of it is going to be about the guys who worked on 9/11 to clean up the mess there. And did you know that Michael Moore got in trouble with the State Department just a couple
mm-hmm.
weeks ago?
Yeah.
Because he supposedly went to Cuba with some of these people to check out if their health care was, I don't know what the reason he went there, but it was something to do with the 9/11 cases that had people who had gotten sick. And to me, Michael Moore is always pushing the envelope, just like you are, Guy, and just like Head On Radio is, and I like that name, Head On, because, you know, just batter him.
It's the only way to meet our problems we have today. Hey, Diana, yeah. thanks for your call. Good to hear from you.
Oh, thank you for being there.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah, these large nursing homes, I've read a lot about and done some research into some of these big companies. Cut staff as much as they can, cut it down to the bare bone. Because the almighty dollar comes first. Yes, it does. And in so many cases, and I don't want to indict them all, but certainly in many cases, the medical care in this country, the bottom line is the most important. The Hippocratic Oath, taking care of patients and making sure they're comfortable and living with dignity doesn't mean a goddamn thing to a lot of people in this country. You know it. I know it. It's getting worse every single day. The sooner we can have a national health care system in this country, and I know there are problems with national health care, but the sooner that we can have a national health care system and get the medical system in this country back on the right track without making us a plateau of millionaires in the medical community off the backs of sick people, well, the better off we're going to be. We're going to pause for a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes, and we're going to have a few minutes of Republican love coming up, so don't go away.
Hello, darkness, my old friend. I've come to talk with you again. Because a vision softly creeping left its seeds while I was sleeping. And the vision that was planted in my brain still remains within the sound of silence. In restless dreams I walked alone, narrow streets of cobblestone, neath the halo of a street lamp. I turned my collar to the cold and damp, when my eyes were stared by the flash of a neon light that split the night and touched the sound of silence. And in the naked light I saw 10,000 people, maybe more. People talking without speaking, people hearing without listening, people writing songs that voices never share. No one dared disturb the sound of silence. Fool said I, you do not know. Silence like a cancer grows. Hear my words that I might teach you. Take my arms that I might reach you. But my words, like silent raindrops, fell got its warning. In the word that it was forming. And the sign said the words of the prophets are written on the subway walls. Tenement halls whispered the sounds of silence.
Ah, the sound of silence, and that's the problem. Too much silence right now. Too much silence over some terrible problems we have in this country, and it's time for people to step up and speak out. It really is. Well, I told you that we would have a few minutes of Republican love today, and that's exactly what I want to do. For those of you that haven't heard a Republican Love segment on the program, we get email from folks. Yes, folks, over on the Republican side, the other side, the, if I may say so, in many cases, evil side. But these people take the time to sit and send us wonderful letters of love. And I'd like to read a couple of them to you today, if you don't mind. Are you ready? Got the orchestra already in the background to provide us some background music. The first one says, Mr. James, at our Sunday evening gathering, one of our members brought in a CD of your program last week where you disparaged the good name of Reverend Jerry Falwell. You repeated things Reverend Falwell had said that you thought reflected badly upon him. You mentioned that he said that if you are not born again, you are condemned to burn in the fires of hell for all eternity. You acted as though there was something wrong with saying that. Mr. James, that statement is probably more true than anything you have ever heard in your entire life. Those of us who believe in God the Father and His only begotten Son, Jesus Christ, know for a fact that Reverend Falwell's statement was true. This is from Lucy. A fact, Lucy? A fact? Care to provide me with some evidence of your fact? I'll agree with faith, but not with fact. Lucy goes on to say, God made the fires of hell for the unbelievers who do not accept Jesus as their Savior. How can you dispute something that has been common knowledge for a couple of thousand years? Common knowledge, Lucy? Do the 5 billion or so non-Christians on this planet know and accept this? She goes on to say, how can you dispute the word of God? She said, well, and I thought to myself, well, I'll tell you, Lucy, when God himself tells me this, then I'll buy it as a fact. Until then, personally, I'll rely upon faith. Lucy continues, Reverend Falwell was a dear and wonderful man who did a lot of wonderful things for his fellow human beings. His love and compassion knew no bounds. Yeah, Lucy, I'm aware of how much he loved gays and those with AIDS and how much he loved apartheid and helped promote the sale of Krugerrands to keep the South African government afloat. His love of minorities showed through when he regularly had George Wallace and Lester Maddox on his old-time Gospel Hour program. He showed his compassion when he started a school for white kids only, back when segregation was a nice word in the South. I will not apologize for my comments about Jerry Falwell, even in death. The man was a very bad influence on this nation, and moreover, he helped the Republican Party become the party of exclusionist racists that they are today. And again, for those of you who want to challenge me when I talk about the Republican Party being racist, notice I said party and not all Republicans, but the ones who are not racist turn a blind eye to the racism in their party, and that's equally bad in my opinion. But if you want to challenge me on my contention that the Republican Party is racist, be sure and include in your arguments your list with the number of black Republican senators and congressmen and their name. If you'll supply me with that, then I will listen to your argument. If you don't have the names and numbers, then don't make a fool of yourself and engage me on this issue. Second letter. To Guy the Idiot James. It's a beautiful salutation. I'm honored indeed. Says, hey bro, what's the deal with your mouthing off about Glenn Beck, Rush Limbaugh, and Sean Hannity? They are the top-rated talkers, so how can you slam them, man? Glenn Beck is my favorite, and I think it makes you look stupid when you talk about him the way you do. These guys get the ratings, and you don't, so how can you make fun of them? They speak the truth, and that is what you don't like about them. All you know is to bash our president, and you're dead wrong about him, too. He's a good man. Signed, Woody. Well, Woody, just because someone has ratings doesn't mean they're right. It just means that they're talking to an audience who doesn't mind if they shovel manure at them day after day to affirm the audience's warped beliefs that perpetual war and racism and illegal spying on our citizens and allowing big business to run the country is a good thing. Remember, Woody, Hitler and Mussolini had big audiences too. Were they right? And Woody, correct me if I'm wrong, you mentioned you like Beck and he's the worst of the worst in right-wing talk radio, and that's saying something because of the current state of right-wing radio. And Woody, I would bet dollars to donuts that you, number one, regularly masturbate to the famous nude pictures of that right-wing queen of hypocrisy, Dr. Laura, in the privacy of your bedroom in your mom's basement, and number two, that you probably count playing a couple of hours of video war games as military service, therefore you don't need to sign up. Number three, your idea of researching is trying to hear if Hannity repeats the same lie that Rush told you earlier in the day. Number four, your idea of debate is seeing who can out-scream whom. And you probably think Fox News is objective. But then again, Woody, you're a brain-dead Bush supporter, and I shouldn't expect any more from you. And our last letter, in a few moments of Republican love, starts out, you stupid liberal fool, and it's spelled liberal, L-I-B-E-R-E-A-L. I guess that's liberal fool. Goes on to say, "What?" This is from Terry, by the way. What a bunch of cut-and-run cowards you are. You aren't willing to stand up and defend your country. That is why we hate liberals. Spelled again wrong. You are cowards, spelled wrong, to the core. Real men defend their country, and I'm afraid you don't fall into that category, you wuss. I proudly served in the 4th Battalion, 23rd Infantry Regiment in Iraq the very day the Iraq War started. I received 2 Purple Hearts and saw some buddies die. But you're a coward willing to talk against the United States and its military. All you liberals are cowards who would run from your own shadows. Don't ever let me get you in my sights, man. Don't ever do it, because I'd drop you without a second thought. Terry. Terry, you make it so easy. I did a little research and found that the Iraq War didn't start until March 20th, 2003. Remember that date, everyone. March 20th, 2003. That's the very day the Bush War started. And Terry, I find it strange that you claim to have been in Iraq on that day, serving in the 4th Battalion, 23rd Infantry Regiment. And why do I find that strange? Because during my research, I found that that particular military group was deactivated during that time. That's right, Terry. The 4th Battalion, 23rd Infantry Regiment was not active at that time and was not reactivated until March 19, 2004 in Fort Wainwright, Alaska, a year after the Iraq War started. And even if you're off by a year on that count, how do you explain the fact, Terry, my brave friend, that the group wasn't deployed to Iraq until August of 2005. That's right. August of 2005. But you, Terry, were there the day the war started. Now, Terry, it couldn't be that you're another big-mouth right-wing liar, could it? Surely you wouldn't be another one of those who think it's okay for someone else to fight the war you love while you're sitting on your front porch spitting tobacco with your coonhounds at your side, a big pick-em-up truck in the driveway, and Fox News playing on the big screen TV that takes up one whole wall of your trailer. You wouldn't be another one of those, would you, Terry? Ah, yes. I love to hear from my Republican friends. And if you are one of my Republican friends, and I use that word extremely loosely, do write. We enjoy your cards and letters and your sentiments of love and respect for the program. Thank you. And thus ends another edition of A Few Minutes of Republican Love. Yeah, I thought Get Off of My Cloud be a good song to play right after Republican Love. Many of them do have their heads in the cloud, do they not? Oh, my God. Interesting to hear from some of these people. And I only read you the nice ones. That's right. I'm kind and considerate to my audience. I only read you the very, very nice letters I get from people. Those are definitely the best of the lot. Certainly the most humorous. We like that. Gee, we got a lot of email during Republican Love. I didn't want to let this segment go today without talking about the right-wing hypocrisy that we point out now and then. And it's a great story some of you may have heard of, and I did want to comment on it. I just couldn't let it go. I mentioned there about our right-wing writer, Woody, that he may be masturbating to the naked pictures of Dr. Laura, the esteemed Dr. Laura. I'm sure you've all seen the naked pictures of Dr. Laura on the Internet, the hypocritical woman that she is. Nothing wrong with naked pictures, but there is something wrong with naked pictures of Dr. Laura, believe me. Anyway, the soldier's son, and this out of the Salt Lake Tribune, Dr. Laura's son linked to a lurid web page. The soldier's son of talk radio relationship counselor Laura Schlesinger is under investigation for a graphic personal web page that one Army official has called repulsive. The MySpace page, publicly available until Friday when it disappeared from the internet, included cartoon depictions of rape, murder, torture, and child molestation, photographs of soldiers with guns in their mouths, a photograph of a bound and blindfolded detainee captioned, "My Sweet Little Habib," accounts of illicit drug use, and a blog entry headlined by a series of obscenities and racial epithets. The site is credited to and includes many photographs of Derek Schlesinger, the 21-year-old son of the talk radio personality simply known as Dr. Laura, broadcast on many radio stations, many family value radio stations. The former family counselor spends 3 hours daily taking calls and offering advice on morals, ethics, and value. Yes, she is. And just to quote some things off of Dr. Laura's son, who's obviously been raised in a fine manner by this good mom. She always says, "I'm my kid's mom." She's very proud of that and always stressed about motherhood and what a good job she's done. Let me read some things off of his blog. "Yes, effing yes," said one blog entry on the Schlesinger site. "I love my job. It takes everything reckless and deviant and heathenistic and just overall bad about me and my hyper focuses these traits into my job of running around this horrid place doing nasty things to people that deserve it and some that don't." Derek Schlesinger joined the Army in 2004, telling a crowd of Santa Barbara, California Army reservists gathered for an appearance by his mother that he resented the way the Americans criticized the war without recognizing soldiers' sacrifices. Derek said, "Real people were fighting, and I wanted to be part of that," the young Schlesinger said, according to the Associated Press. Since Derek Schlesinger deployed earlier this year, his mother's talk show increasingly has been focused on the battles being waged in Iraq and Afghanistan and the war's efforts on families back home. Meanwhile, the radio host has taken to referring to herself as the proud mother of a deployed American paratrooper and speaks frequently about her soldier son before military audiences nationwide. And her people don't want to comment much about this. No. Derek Schlesinger's website included a 21-year-old soldier. The 21-year-old soldier indicates that he's stationed in Kandahar, Afghanistan, where the site's author writes, "Godless, crazy people like me have become a generation of apathetic killers." And Laura recently told soldiers' wives that she didn't want to hear the complaints of military wives whose husbands are deployed. Said he could come back without arms, legs, or eyeballs, and you're bitching, Schlesinger said. "You're not dodging bullets," he said to the wives. She said to the wives, so I don't want to hear any whining. Ah, the compassionate conservatives. Do they not know what the word hypocrisy means? Do they not care? An amazing story. Hey, thank you for being with us for the first hour of the Guy James Show. We got a whole lot more coming up in the second hour. We hope you'll stay with us here on the Head On Radio Network. And don't forget, we'll expect you to call in the second half and give us your feelings on the subjects we'll be talking about.
This is the Quality News Network. A fragile truce between the Islamic militant group hiding in a Palestinian refugee camp and the Lebanese army was broken when rockets struck a UN aid convoy sent in to help the affected civilians. Fatah al-Islam called for a ceasefire, which the Lebanese army conditionally agreed to. It is unclear who fired on the convoy. Former KGB agent and Russian citizen Andrei Lukovoy will be charged with murder in the poisoning death of fellow KGB operative and Kremlin critic Alexander Litvinenko. British authorities want to extradite Lugovoy and demand full cooperation from Moscow, despite the fact Russian constitution does not allow the extradition of its citizens. Pakistani troops today raided a village on the Afghan border, killing at least three militants in a training camp thought to be operated by terrorists. Pakistani officials say the battle is still ongoing. In Afghanistan, NATO and U.S. officials say coalition forces must boost anti-drug raids in their battle against the Taliban. Afghanistan produces 90% of the world's heroin supply, and officials say much of the profit from the region's poppy fields funds Islamic militants. In Baghdad, a car bomb exploded in a crowded marketplace this morning, killing at least 25. 60 were wounded. In a separate attack, a family was killed, including four children, when they were shot by gunmen at a phony police checkpoint. In the Anbar province today, U.S.-led coalition forces arrested 15 suspected terrorists. The arrests are part of a countrywide crackdown on al-Qaeda. In New York, a Florida doctor is facing 30 years in prison for volunteering to treat injured al-Qaeda fighters so they could return to battle against coalition forces in Iraq. He was convicted yesterday. Three of his friends have also been found guilty of supporting terrorists. In Tokyo, a Japanese official announced Australia, the U.S., and Japan are considering development of a joint missile system to shield the region from weapons fired from North Korea or China. Representatives from the three countries will meet later this year to discuss the plans. In the Congo, Mai Mai militia fighters have attacked sites in Africa's oldest national park, killing one wildlife officer and wounding three others. 13 park employees were taken hostage. The militia says if the government retaliates, they will slaughter the entire population of endangered mountain gorillas. On Capitol Hill, the Senate today could vote on two amendments pertaining to the guest worker portion of the controversial immigration bill. One amendment would eliminate the guest worker portion of the bill completely. The other would cut it in half. This is the Quality News Network. Science and business are next.
Terry's Lounge at the Cypress Inn in downtown Carmel invites you to a great evening of your favorite foods, beverages, and live music Thursday through Saturday, featuring Dick Whittington and friends from 6 to 9:30. Terry's Lounge in the Cypress Inn features an appetizer-sized menu and our famous burger, salad, and fries. Afternoon tea, a great local tradition, is served from 1 to 4 p.m. daily by reservation. Sunday evenings are special as Richard Divnick entertains from 5 to 8 p.m. with classical renditions of pop, jazz, and classical music. Join the fun, food, and music at Terry's Lounge in the Cypress Inn, corner of Lincoln and 7th. In downtown Carmel.
Argentinian scientists say their tests show Viagra may help reduce jet lag and the sleep adjustment problems for night shift workers. The drug seems to work best if given in low dosages. Viagra is produced by Pfizer, the world's largest drug maker. A blood testing kit goes on sale next month to allow owners of mixed breed dogs to use DNA to find out the specific combination of breeds in their mutts. Veterinarians say the test could help alert owners to the medical needs of their pets. The wayward whales Delta and Dawn, which began heading down the Sacramento River toward the Pacific, have made a U-turn. Frustrated rescuers say the mother and her calf were frightened from the noise around the Rio Vista Bridge. Meetings begin today with the U.S. and Chinese trade delegates aimed at reducing economic tensions between the two countries. The U.S. is protesting China's enormous trade surplus and Beijing's refusal to devalue its currency. Thousands of air travelers have been stranded by a strike of flight attendants and air controllers in Italy. Some of the world's most prominent airlines, including British Air, Lufthansa, and Iberia, have canceled flights. T-Mobile today issues the first U.S. cell phone that includes Microsoft's Windows Mobile. $300 T-Mobile Wing offers email, documents, and internet browsing. And right now, light sweet crude is trading at $65.91 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. And on Wall Street, the Dow Jones is up 34 points, the NASDAQ is up 10, and the S&P 500 is up 2. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Jay Gallet.
Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Live!
life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Begin countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you've read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Back with you here in the Guy James Show. Just chuckling about that story I just heard on the news. I wasn't sure I heard it right. Talking about Viagra being a cure, whatever, for jet lag. Did you hear that during the news just now? It says Viagra helps with jet lag. I heard that and I thought, well, maybe it does, but I don't know. Wouldn't it cause for some embarrassing situations getting off the plane and having to walk through the airport? I don't know. I'm just asking. It just seemed like a strange story. It really did. Oh, speaking of strange stories. I want to talk about the economy coming up in just a moment or two, but Melanie Morgan, you all know who Melanie Morgan is, a self-righteous right-wing bitch that has a radio show in L.A., and she's another one, in my opinion, just like one of our one of the people we have on the left. She's certainly one of them on the right who decided to be a right-winger for money, decided to take a political position on the radio for money. And she was recently on PBS, and anyway, they said that she's never going to have her. They're never going to have her back on there again. They're never going to have Melanie Morgan back on PBS again, and good for them. And I looked up some background on Melanie Morgan, and she wrote that horrible book. Her and that friend of hers wrote that book about I can't think of what the book was right now. Well, anyway, she wrote a book about Camp Casey and all that went on there and how she thought it was so terrible and all this. It's a very disparaging book. Turns out that Melanie Morgan was a liberal most all of her life. She ran into a big problem that she was an out of control. Can you say... Bill Bennett, out of control gambling addict. And before she made it big here, she ran up $25,000 in credit card and cash losses, and she didn't she couldn't stop gambling, and she didn't stop after she became pregnant for the second time. She gambled right up till her water broke before giving birth to her son CJ. She didn't stop after her son was born either. Often, while she was at the tables, she left the baby in the care of her teenage stepson, Greg, from her first marriage. And frustrated at constantly being left with the baby, one day Greg slapped the child, leaving a bruise on his cheek. And after the doctor saw the bruise, Morgan's family self-reported the incident to the Child Protective. Quite a story here from these righteous right-wingers. Quite a story. A gambling addict, Melanie Morgan. My, who would have thunk it? Who would have? And I always appreciate getting your emails. And a good friend of mine, Colonel Colin Charette, U.S. Air Force retired fighter pilot, sent me a note yesterday. He said, I sent the following email to over 100 members of Congress and also President Bush. Today it will go to over 1,000 members of the news media nationwide. Dear U.S. Congress, says the colonel, President George W. Bush has violated many constitutional laws, too many to list, and refuses to listen to anyone. And since U.S. Attorney General Gonzalez fails to recognize this fact, it's up to the U.S. Congress. Do you have the intestinal fortitude, plain old guts, to do your sworn duty in upholding the U.S. Constitution and impeach Bush and his NFC henchmen? The longer you wait, the more blood on your hands as the Iraq War unfolds. Colonel Charette, U.S. Air Force, retired fighter pilot, 31 years active service in the military. Thank you, Colonel. Good to hear from you again. The man has it right on. Wanted to talk a little bit about the economy today. I've been a little lax in doing so lately, and there's a lot of economic news out there, and I know all of you think about economic news every time you pull up to the gas station nowadays, and we're going to try and do a little bit of an in-depth talk about gas prices later on in the week. Are there any of you, anybody, who think this all isn't a big con job, a big conspiracy, the gas prices, that the refineries just happen to have problems around Memorial Day when it's the big driving time? Just happen to have them then. And all the tales of woe, how they can't build new refineries because of federal restrictions. Bull. Not true. They've reinvested practically nothing into new equipment and new refineries and safety equipment and so forth. The oil companies have it. It's all gone to the bottom line. And we're going to try and talk about that a little later in the week and get some real comprehensive stories about it. But pertaining to the economy, time and time again lately, we're hearing the Republicans remind us of how great the economy has done under their management over the past 6 years. And frankly, every time I hear one of them say that, I shake my head in amazement at their gall and their absolutely willful avoidance of the undeniable truth. Who could deny that now? You know, somebody please tell me, how can it be that the economy is doing so well when working families have had their income drop 5 years in a row? Tell me how this economy can be said to be so good when over 5 million Americans have dropped into the level of poverty since Junior Bush and his people took over the government. How can you say that? Over 1 million of that number are children. How about comparing the Great Depression to now? The last time the personal savings rate in this country was below zero. The savings rate below zero, the last time that happened was during the Depression. Is that a booming economy? You know, Mr. Bush, there are almost 7 million Americans who have lost their health insurance since you came into office. 7 million without insurance anymore. I know people in that condition, and I know many of you do as well, and I know many of my listeners right now don't have any health insurance. 7 million since he came into office have lost their health insurance. And I'm not saying that is your fault personally, Mr. Bush, but you and your party, well, yes, it is. You have fostered an environment where it's okay for big business to screw the working man. It's okay. Your anti-union, anti-worker agenda has helped take health care away from 7 million Americans. And the statistics show more and more every day that more Americans are struggling to put food on their table. And you talk about a booming economy? We know that about 500,000 high school kids who are qualified but unable to afford the cost and are being left out of the higher education system. You talk about no child left behind. How about our kids are being left behind because they don't have the money to go to college? Is that a booming economy? In the richest nation on earth? I know somebody who's in the home foreclosure business. And I'm told business has never been so good. Foreclosures. And I'm not blaming the people who handle the foreclosures. Somebody has to. But people are losing their homes because they can no longer afford the American dream. Their jobs being taken overseas. Medical bills because of being uninsured. These things are contributing to the huge, and I'm talking huge, foreclosure rate. And the Republicans are talking about a booming economy when home ownership is going backwards. And as Bernie Sanders told us not so long ago, pensions are going down the drain. Since Junior Bush took office, 3 million fewer people have pensions. And half of the private sector have no pensions at all. Did you hear that? Half of the private sector have no pensions at all. And you say, well, everybody should put something away for a rainy day. How the hell can the people on minimum wage put away even a dollar for something for a rainy day? How? We have homes being foreclosed upon. We have pensions gone by the wayside. Of course, a small part of the economy is doing very well. A small segment of the population, to be sure, but nonetheless, some Americans are doing extremely well right now. The rich are doing very well, thank you. The rich are getting very much richer. They're doing better than almost a century. The workers in Detroit are out of jobs. People are struggling to put food on their tables, and yet the rich have never had it so good in this country. The fact, the disparity between the rich and the poor leaves us with the widest gap between the classes than any major country on earth. Isn't that a nice statement about the United States of America? We have a bigger disparity between the rich and the poor, the widest gap between the classes of any major country on earth. Booming economy indeed. The upper 1% of American families are obscenely rich. And their net worth is a collective $1.25 trillion. And my question is, when is enough enough? When does this administration decide that there are no more taxes to cut for the rich? When does this administration decide to turn their attention to doing something for the working man in this country? When does this administration look past Park Avenue and look upon the Flint, Michigans of this country? I met Senator Saunders a couple of months ago and found him to be a real person, a man whose rhetoric and his voting record puts him square on the side of the working people in this country. I like the guy. And I will tell you that, in my opinion, he's less political and more caring about the average American Joe than anybody else in the United States Senate, with the possible exception of Ted Kennedy. At least we have somebody working for us there. Somebody. And going on even more about the economy, talking about gasoline, talking about filling up your tank, how much is gas where you live right now? Where I live, it's currently about, oh, around $3.15, $3.19 a gallon and up. I know it's worse in other parts of the country. I know people on the West Coast are getting hit particularly hard. North of here in Georgia and South Carolina, it's a little less because the state taxes are somewhat less than they are here. People that used to have a little something left over for an extra book for their kids or a treat for their kid or a little something special for the dinner table don't have it anymore because it's gone in the gas tank and it's gone to the bottom line of the obscenely wealthy oil companies. And I found some interesting stats on gasoline. In 1961, when a Democrat was president, the minimum wage was $1 an hour, and gasoline cost about 20 cents a gallon. So a person making minimum wage in 1961 could buy 5 gallons of gas for 1 hour of work. Let's be fair. Let's compare it to the wages of the time and the price of gas at the time. So on minimum wage in 1961, when John F. Kennedy was the president, a person making minimum wage could buy 5 gallons of gas for 1 hour of work. In 1971, the minimum wage was $1.60, and gasoline cost 36 cents a gallon. And a person on minimum wage could buy 4.44 gallons of gasoline for 1 hour of work. By 1986, the minimum wage was $3.35. And a gallon of gasoline cost 87 cents a gallon. A person making minimum wage could buy 3.85 gallons of gas for 1 hour of work. And in 1992, the minimum wage was $4.25. And a gallon of gas cost $1.10. So a person could buy 3.86 gallons of gas for 1 hour of labor. Today, gasoline in Georgia is $2.95 a gallon. Person on minimum wage can barely buy 2 gallons of gas for an hour of labor. Does this not point out exactly what's happened to the buying power of the poorest working people among us? Does this not point it out? And where's the money going for the gas? If you'd like to call the program.
866-546-5254. On the Isle of Montserrat, no, I never shall forget. Just a country boy, a guitar, and a song. You invited me in, and you've treated me like kin, and you've given me a reason to go home.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Guy James Show. Heading toward the bottom of the second hour. We welcome you to call us, 866-546-5254. And on the line right now, we've got Preston from Denver. Hi, Preston.
Hi, Guy.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I actually just returned from a couple secondhand stores, and there's certainly a lot of poverty in our societies. It's hard to miss. And I was looking at the books, actually. You were talking about people wanting to get maybe a book for their children, and it was kind of sad to see the sorts of books that are offered at a lot of these secondhand stores where people are kind of forced to shop. A lot of military-related stuff, Tom Clancy novels, I don't know, kind of a sad selection. So I actually had gone there to drop off a whole bunch of progressive material, and maybe some of your listeners might want to do that as a sort of media activism, provide better stuff to working-class people.
Well, that's a good idea. You're right. I haven't perused the book section of actually not far from where I live. There's a big I believe it's Salvation Army.
Okay.
Secondhand store, and the thing is mammoth, and I know they're doing a great business right now, and that's why, because of the economy, no question.
Yeah. And a lot of people, either they can make a living through maybe joining police force or the military, or they make a living through the underground economy. I understand it's something like, different estimates, but something like 10% of our economy, maybe more, is through things like, drug dealing or prostitution. And then that makes them vulnerable to be put into the prison system, which is another big booming economy in this country.
Oh, it is. The privatized prisons are doing great.
Yeah. Yeah. And, so much of our economy is subsidized. I mean, there's a lot of rhetoric about free markets and the free hand of capitalism and all that kind of stuff. But the fact of the matter is a lot of our public dollars go to expanding these prison systems and, of course, expanding our wars, expanding the job market for, Blackwater. I mean, people who are working in that field, they're making a ton of money.
Exactly
so
right.
The economies are great.
I don't think the public would want to know how many of their tax dollars goes to private concerns like that. I don't think they'd want to.
Yep. And to providing, wages to find people like Derek Schlesinger, who get so totally perverted in these terrible relations we have with other countries in the world. Another part, parts of our economy do very well, like the extractive industries. They're taking all this coltan out of Africa right now, and coltan is a mineral that's used in our cell phones. And, of course, the African people are getting totally ripped off. But, the people who run these transnational mining interests, oh, yeah, their economies are great. Their stocks are going through the roof, and it's really ugly. But on a more hopeful note, there is some growth in something called natural capitalism, where there are technologies being developed that don't destroy the world, that help us create a sustainable economy. For instance, here in Colorado, they're working on building a wind turbine factory, and it's going to employ over 400 people. So, I think we're going to see a lot more of that kind of thing in solar development.
Well, we're going to have to. We're absolutely going to have to depend on things like that to save our economy, no question, and help save our resources so that we don't stay so dependent upon others for some of our resources.
And, we could invest in mass transit, too, so that people aren't getting stuck all the time, aren't kind of forced, don't become dependents on the oil industry. So
mass transit, it could be the answer to so many of our oil problems in this country, at least help it for a long, long time. And yet very few communities and the government have been willing to put forth the money and all that it takes to get a good mass transit system. I know we had one planned here in Florida. The voters voted for it. And somehow it got lost along the wayside. So, we could sure use it now.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it would save lives, too, actually. I mean, think how many fewer drunk driving fatalities we would have each year if we had a good mass transit system. You know, people could go out and party and hop on the buses or the trains, and, you know, they won't be smashing each other.
Are you suggesting we have a whole trainload of drunks?
It would be nice to have an alternative.
See, now there's another business right there we can think of. We'll sell booze on the mass transit trains.
You know, it's interesting. You know, I think, you know, generally speaking, I'm glad that there are immigrants here. They help us and enrich our culture in many ways. But sometimes, you know, there are immigrants who come here and they get in drunk driving accidents. But I noticed in Latin America, a lot of those countries, they have better mass transit systems than we do. With a fraction of the resources, they have these incredibly efficient, consistent, and very popular systems where you can get wherever you want for very cheaply. It's amazing. I mean, there are things we can learn from them.
Oh, the Americans learn from somebody else? What a concept. Hey, thanks so much for your call, Preston. Good to hear from you.
Bye-bye.
You know, Preston's right, and things are going to have to change, and we as Americans have got to understand that we're in a mess here right now. I don't know how else to put it, but we're in a mess. And when you stop and think about the rest of the world, don't just think about us, but our two biggest competitors right now for our jobs are China and India. And you know, there's a lot of if I looked up some stats on this, and they're fascinating. In fact, this came off of Glumbert.com, and I thank my friend Paul for sending this to me. I found this absolutely fascinating. Some of you may not, but some of it is and some of it isn't for some of you. I liked all of it. Glumbert.com, Glumbert.com, and it's called Shift Happens. Did you know you're one in a million in China? If you're one in a million in China, there are 1,300 just like you, if you're one in a million. And in India, you're one out of 1,100. Did you know that the 25% of the highest IQ people in China is great? Get this. The highest 25% of the IQ in China is greater than the total population of North America. In India, it's the top 28%. Translation for teachers, they have more honor kids in those two countries than we have kids. Did you know China will soon become the number one English-speaking country on earth? Did you know that if you took every single job in the United States today, every job, and shipped it to China, China would still have more workers than jobs? If they took all of our jobs, they'd still have more workers than jobs. And did you know that during the course of what I'm going to talk about here right now, 60 babies will be born in the U.S., 244 in China, and 351 in India? Now, some of the more interesting parts of this whole study is the U.S. Department of Labor estimates that today's learner will have 10 to 14 jobs by the age of 38. Imagine that in the days you think about your father and the gold watch and all. Today's people entering the job market will have 10 to 14 jobs by the age of 38. And according to the U.S. Department of Labor, one out of four workers today is working for a company for whom they've been employed for less than 1 year. One out of four. And more than one out of two are working for a company for whom they've worked for less than 5 years. More than one out of two. That's how much it's changing. That's how much the job market is changing in this country. And according to former Secretary of Education, Richard Riley, the top 10 jobs that will be in demand in 2010 didn't even exist in 2004. So what that means is we're currently preparing students for jobs that don't yet exist using technologies that haven't yet been invented in order to solve problems we don't even know are problems yet. Name this country. A little quiz for you. Name this country. The richest in the world, the largest military, the center of business and finance, the strongest education system, the world center of innovation and invention, the currencies, the world standard of value, and the highest standard of living. Name that country. It's England in 1900. Did you know the U.S. is 20th in the world in broadband internet penetration? Even Luxembourg passed us. 20th in broadband internet penetration. Did you know that Nintendo invested more than $140 million, and this is a staggering statistic. Nintendo invested more than $140 million in research and development in 2002 alone, and the U.S. federal government spent less than half as much on research and innovation in our educational system. Did you know that one out of every couples married in the U.S. last year met online? One out of every eight. There are over 106 million registered users of MySpace. If MySpace were a country, it'd be the 11th largest country in the world, in between Japan and Mexico. Times are changing, and we're living in exponential times. There are over 2.7 billion searches performed on Google every month. And who answered these questions before Google? And the number of text messages sent and received every day. Get this. The number of text messages sent and received every day exceeds the population of the planet. There are about 540,000 words in the English language, about five times as many as during Shakespeare's time. And more than 3,000 new books are published every single day. 3,000 new books. It's estimated that a week's worth of New York Times contains more information than a person was likely to come across in a lifetime in the 18th century. Amazing. Predictions are that by 2013, a supercomputer will be built that exceeds the computation capability of the human brain. And by 2023, when today's first graders will be just 23 years old and beginning their first careers, it'll only take a $1,000 computer to exceed the capabilities of the human brain. And while technical predictions farther out than 15 years are hard to make, predictions are that by 2049, a $1,000 computer will exceed the computational capabilities of the entire human race. What does that mean? As they say, shift happens. Now you know. Some interesting stats. 866-546-5254. Getting back to the economy a little bit. Banks began foreclosure proceedings against 60% more U.S. homeowners last month compared with a year ago, as falling housing prices made it more difficult for borrowers to refinance mortgages. That's one thing that a lot of people aren't thinking about. Prices are getting lower and people can't refinance. And more than 160,000 filings were posted in April, the highest number since they've been collecting data. And in California alone, filings rose to 38,400, more than triple the number a year ago. I must tell you that here locally, where I live, foreclosures are up by sixfold over last year. Sixfold. The number of owners making late payments on mortgages is at a four-year high. And the failure or sale of 50 subprime mortgage companies has tightened the supply of money for lending. So the housing market's not looking very good right now. Not very good at all. There's been a tremendous redistribution of wealth in this country. From World War II to 1980, it was called a picket fence distribution, with each quintile getting almost the same in percentages. But after St. Ronnie of Reagan came to town, it became kind of a stepladder distribution, with the rich getting richer, and you know what happened to people on the lower rung of the ladder. Reagan increased spending by 80%, increased deficits by 110%, our debt by 187%. This is a Republican for small government and less spending, the saint of the Republican Party. In 200 years, we had less than $1,000 billion debt in debt, and in 8, he added $1,700 billion. Well, you know, it's Reagan's budget that did it. They like to blame it on Congress. His budget spent more in 8 years than the prior 50 years. Republicans haven't been very good for our economy, I'm afraid. Never have been. Never will be. It'll be for the rich and nobody else. That's it. Plain and simple. That's how it is. 866-546-5254. Love to hear from you. We'll be back.
Between sundown's finish and midnight's broken tone, we duck inside the doorway, thunder crashing. As majestic bells and bones struck shadows in the sound, seeming to be the chimes of freedom clashing.
Rushing for the warriors whose strength is not defined. Flashing for the refugees on the unarmed road of flight. And for each and every underdog soldier in the night. And we gazed upon the chimes of freedom flashing.
Curtain in a far off corner flash, and the hypnotic splattered mist was slowly lifting. Electric lights still struck like arrows, fired before the ones condemned to drift or else be kept from drifting.
Searching ones on their speechless seeking trail for the lonesome hearted lovers with too personal a tale. And for each unharmful channel soul misplaced inside a jail. And we gazed upon the chimes of freedom flashing.
Track of hours for they hang suspended. As we listen one last time and we watch with one last look, spellbound and swallowed till the tolling ended.
Tolling for the aching ones whose wounds cannot be nursed.
Heading toward the top of the hour, the final hour here in the Guy James Show today, 866-546-5254. If you'd like to join us, we hope you do. 866-546-5254. A little more on the economy. As summer approaches, a lot of Americans, of course, are thinking about vacation plans. I'm not, but a lot of people are. But unfortunately, nearly one in four Americans received no paid vacation or holiday time. One in four. Even worse, nearly half of all full-time private sector workers in the U.S. get no paid sick days, with low-income workers, parents, and people with chronic illnesses hit the hardest. Businesses also suffer in productivity, and other workers face health risk when sick employees are forced to go to work. The American public overwhelmingly agrees that all workers deserve days off from work. 95% of workers believe it's unacceptable for employers to deny sick days. Something Ted Kennedy's working on. You might know it would be Ted Kennedy. For many Americans, getting sick may mean getting fired. And here's probably, to me, the most upsetting stats of the day. At least 145 countries have paid sick days. 145. The United States is the only industrialized country lacking such a policy for the nation. The situation, of course, is the worst for the nation's lowest wage earners, 80% of whom receive no sick days. Food service workers who are in constant contact with the public are also among the least likely to receive paid sick days. 86 of them get no sick days at all. Where are we going? Let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
I just heard you because I listen to you online on my computer here.
Uh-huh.
Okay, now I'm 58 years old, okay? Now, I remember the Reagan era, but you got to remember also, Guy, that both houses were controlled by the Democrats at that time, and they went along with a lot of Reagan policies.
He made the budget, the Congress.
Yeah, the budget, uh-huh.
Yeah, the budget was Ronald Reagan's budget, not the Congress's.
Okay, but they controlled both houses, didn't they?
For most of the time, but it was his budget.
I understand it was his budget, but they could have vetoed it, correct? They did not have to go along with it.
They weren't veto-proof.
Huh?
It wasn't veto-proof.
It wasn't veto-proof?
No.
Okay. Give me another reason. Could they have filibustered then in the Senate?
Oh, I suppose they could. Don't get me wrong.
My point is the fact that the Democrats are not steadfast. They don't have no heart to stand up. Look right now, they're going to go along with Bush policy right now. You see how they relinquished now as far as the Iraqi situation as funding is concerned?
Absolutely. You're absolutely right.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yep.
They're like marshmallows, you understand?
You got it, man. You got it. You're exactly right. Marshmallows is a perfect word.
And that's what makes me angry about the Democrats. Because they're not willing to take their gloves off and fight as hard and strong as the Republicans did.
You're exactly right. I couldn't agree with you more. I've been ashamed of the performance of especially this new Congress right now.
So have I.
Yeah.
You know, it's like when I look at Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid, right? To me, they've been grandstanding more than anything else. Because when Bush didn't really get down buckled, they retract their statements and everything else. You understand?
Oh, absolutely. And I suppose you're in the same boat as me. I've said all along that they'll buckle on this war thing, and they're going to.
Yes, they will.
Yeah.
But, you know, in a lot of ways, I have to blame it's the people's fault because they put the same characters in there over and over again.
I guess all that money spent on political ads really works, doesn't it?
It does. I'm afraid so.
It does. And where?
and another thing, too, Guy, if people would just take a little time off when they do have some free time, go to the libraries and just do a little bit of research. Then they realize, you know, these and study their background as far as voting is concerned, right?
It's there for everybody to see.
It is. It's just a little homework on the people's part, and you can change the situation in this country.
You're absolutely right. That's where the major fault is with the people.
Yes, sir. It is. Okay, keep up the good work, guys.
Hey, thanks for your call. Good to hear from you.
Bye.
Good call. New caller, and a good call, and he's absolutely right. Do I sit here and say things against the Bush administration? I most certainly do. And I haven't commented a lot about it today, but am I happy with the way the new Congress is performing? Oh, no. No, I am not. I've said from the beginning I thought they'll buckle on this war issue or the funding issue, and they're going to prove me right. They're going to prove me right. They don't have the guts to how do you not have the guts to stand up to a 28% president? That's the part to me. You know, if Bush were at 42%, 45%, 38%, 39%, 40%, I might understand at least. But how do you not challenge a 28% president? How do you not? How do you not just go down to the White House if you're the Democratic leadership, look him in the eye and say, stuff it, man. We're not going along with you. I don't give a damn what you want for this war. We're not gonna do it. Where's that resolve in the Democratic Party? Where's Nancy and Harry? Where are they on this issue? I'm so frustrated with it right now, especially when it's come to light here in the past. Last night it came to light that they're going to cave. They're going to cave. And they're going to give the guy what he wants. And then they're going to put some condition on it. Well, we'll relook at it in September. And you know damn well what's going to come along in September. Well, let's give it 6 more months, and then 6 more months, and then 6 more months. That's what's been happening for how long now? And it's as if General Petraeus is some sort of a savior. Did you notice Bush mentioned Petraeus's name 16 times in one speech last week? He's a crutch for him. And where the hell did Petraeus get this big reputation? He was stationed in northern Iraq where there wasn't much trouble in the beginning. He wasn't in the heavy fighting. And his second job over there was to train the Iraqi army. And I think we all know how well they did at that. So, where's this coming from? And why? Why won't the Democrats stand and fight? I'll tell you, it's hard for me. It is hard for me. As you know, I'm a proud Democrat. I'm a liberal Democrat. I am damn proud of it. And it's getting harder and harder and harder all the time to say that. I would never leave the party. But the party's going to have to come back to us. It's going away from us. The ideals that the Democratic Party stands for, the leadership is not standing up for. They're just not. And like I said, how do you cave to a 28% president? How do you cave to the worst president in our nation's history? How do you cave to a United States president when the entire world is on your side? The world community hates his guts. And rightly so. So who are the Democrats afraid of? Who? I'm just not getting it. Or perhaps I am getting it and I don't want to admit it. Are both parties infected with big business money? So much. But they've lost sight of what's right and wrong. I don't know. Very disconcerting. Very much so. And now we have, you know, it's something else. The Democrats just stand up and say, oh, well, okay. The Bush administration has released a directive called the National Security and Homeland Security Presidential Directive. And the directive was released back on, I think it was May 8th or 9th. And it's gone almost unnoticed by the mainstream and the alternative media. Where was our Democratic leadership on this? This is understandable, considering the huge Ron Paul and immigration news. But the story about this Homeland Security Presidential Directive is equally as huge as either one of those stories. In this directive, Bush declares that in the event of a catastrophic emergency, the president would be entrusted with leading the activities to ensure constitutional government. The language in this directive would, in effect, make the president of the United States a dictator in the case of such an emergency. Can you imagine George W. Bush having unfettered power in this country? Can you imagine what he and Karl Rove and Dick Cheney and the rest of their henchmen would do if they had the power to do anything they wanted to in case of a catastrophic emergency in this country? I cannot fathom what might happen. I cannot. It's too bizarre. It's unthinkable to think that people like this could have unlimited power in the case of a national emergency. Declare martial law. Get rid of their enemies. Do anything they wanted to do. It's a scary thought. And before these Republicans go along with something like this, you might consider that maybe someday there might be somebody in the other party that might be just as bad. You never know. So people, consider not only now but the future when you think about going along with things like this National Security and Homeland Security Presidential Directive. It's an awful thing. If you haven't read about it, please do. It's called the National Security and Homeland Security Presidential Directive, and it's a frightening, frightening document. It truly is. Well, here we are down at the end of another program. I don't know where the time went today. We had a good audience today, and I'm so pleased that you've all joined us. Always good to hear from each and every one of you. I appreciate your emails. All your correspondence. And I thank you once again for joining us here on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network. Don't forget, this is a listener-supported program. We appreciate your support. We need your support to keep doing the program, and we hope you'll help us out with that. Don't forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. Have a good one, gang.